some years ago, I remember sitting at a kitchen table speaking to an individual in the church, a man who at that point was unemployed, and he was telling me about his life, and I had met him, I knew him socially, but I had not yet got to meet him in a more personal way. And so I was out there just visiting in that intent, and he was telling me what had happened in his life. And he was saying how when he was younger, he had a very good job and he made very good money, but he resented the need to tithe and to take money out of that in terms of the offerings. He felt like the money that was being taken out in that sense was reducing his options. And even though he tithed at that point, he resented it. And at some point, I think he probably cut back in terms of what his offerings or his dedication in that way was. But he had been unemployed then for some time, and he said, you know, I look back at that now, and he says, what I would give to just have what was left of my paycheck back then, now. He says, because now I have nothing. And he was quite destitute financially in circumstances trying to provide for his family. He'd run into many, many hard times. But I do remember so clearly him telling me how blessed it would be if he could have what had been the remnant of his paycheck in those previous times. Recently, Michelle has been working with the Civil Air Patrol. We are both members. My assistance to the organization is basically a moral leadership presentation about every 2 months to the cadets. She works as one of the personnel officers, or a D officer, personnel officer, but they're fixing up the facility where they meet in out of Phelps Airfield. And she has been going around to various individuals, getting donations so that they can fix up the room for an office where they have the classes. They are provided with a facility. The Air Force provides them with their plane, but they have no budget. And so a carpet seller has donated the carpet for the floor. Michelle went and said, look, I'm with Civil Air Patrol. We do search and rescue. We're teaching young kids leadership in the community. And they contribute in this way. Can you help us? And so she has the carpet now for the floor. She has the lights that are installed now in the ceiling, donated by Electrical Outlet Company. She has had the copier serviced and completely refurbished and toner put in it and returned to her for free by someone who said, okay, fine, I will help the Civil Air Patrol. She's had the computer that we had donated a couple of years back to them completely fixed up and refurbished and cleaned up and put in order so she could use it back then. And then we have donated a more recent one as well so that she can pass that one on to the cadets. She has had, indeed, chairs donated, and she's waiting on the tables. But she has literally gone around the city and said, would you help, would you help, and would you? And she has collected all of these things and put together that office and the classroom for the Civil Air Patrol to meet in. People support what they consider to be good causes. When we pay our tithes, when we give our offerings to God, we're doing considerably more than supporting a good cause. We're obeying God, and we're giving Him thanks. But it's also an act of worship. Giving to God is not a burden or a constraint. It is part of our rightful worship of God. In fact, it is one of the most incredible blessings that we could ever imagine. I remember in college at times when circumstances were a little tight financially, and I was better off than most. I had the GI Bill coming in, and I had a car. And the problem I had was keeping the car running so that I could loan it to the rest of the student body, because they didn't have a car. But when times were a little bit tighter, I consciously remember in those early years in the church, I would say, okay, I'm a little tight right now, and I would go and I would make an extra offering just to say, well, maybe God will work it out. And time again, I found that God, he came in and he blessed my life in some specific way. It was a remarkable process. In the book of Psalms, Psalm 50, God contrasts what it is that he has as if we would think sometimes that he needed what we have. And he just reminds us, I really don't need what you have. The reason I have you give offering to me is for your good, not because of my need. That's an interesting concept. That's simply not the way this world often works. I very much appreciated Sir Alwine's sermonette. It was an interesting concept. How, you know, what this world does is one thing, but what God does is different. In this way, it is the same. Hear, O my people, and I will speak. O Israel, and I will testify against you. I am God, your God. I will not reprove you for your sacrifices or your burnt offerings, which are continually before me. I will not take a bull from your house, nor goats out of your folds. Every beast of the forest is mine, and the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know all the birds of the mountains, and the wild beasts of the field are mine. God says, you can't give me something, it's already mine. What I'm doing is for your sake. Says, if I were hungry, I would not tell you, for the world is mine in all its fullness. Will I eat the flesh of bulls or drink the blood of goats? Offer to God thanksgiving. Pay your vows to the Most High. Call on me in the day of trouble, and I will deliver you, and you shall glorify me. The point is that I've called you into relationship with me, and the purpose is that if you will submit to me and call on me, I will intercede on your behalf. That's what I want to do. And so God says, you don't have to pay me, but I do want you to obey, and I want you to serve me, and I want you to be in relationship to me for your own good. Over the years, maybe more in years past, when I traveled more by myself, but one of the things that I always look forward to are the natural history museums. If I would be in New York City going to the feast, or maybe in Los Angeles passing through, we lived in Pasadena, but in Denver, passing through, coming back from camp or somewhere, Washington, D.C. at the Smithsonian when we were there on the bike trip way, way back. But the natural history museums contain some of the finest specimens of God's creation that are available for public display. You know, I always enjoyed the dinosaurs, but as much as that, maybe more so, I enjoyed the precious gems and stones. It's hard to imagine just how fabulously rich the earth is in the way it was created. What do you think maybe the largest gold nugget that has ever been found, how big it was? Can you imagine? I mean, we see gold nuggets on display. When we were in Boise, Oregon, Baker City now had a gold display in the bank where it was just out in a plexiglass case with great big nuggets that had been taken out of the mountain areas in that part. I mean, the biggest ones were maybe the size of a small egg. The largest gold nugget, at least a few years back, weighed 472 pounds. Can you imagine? Now, don't you think that God knows where the big nuggets are that haven't been discovered? Think about how much of the earth is water instead of land. All we have done is scavenge around and despoil most of the land. And we haven't discovered all that was there. But if the vast majority of even the surface of the earth is water, then much of the mineral deposits are still hidden and buried in places that we can't even go. And so there's this gold nugget somebody pulled out that was 472 pounds. I think we could do the work with a nugget like that. You know, I think we really could. We could cash out whatever we needed to do. There's a pearl that has been found, a pearl, 14 pounds. You know, can you imagine that on a necklace? I mean, what do you think that would go for on Shoppers Network? You know, this 14-pound pearl on a nice big gold, you know, boat chain or something to hang it from. They have a ruby, the largest ruby, is actually a broken stone, so they weren't able to get the whole thing in one piece, so it's a broken stone. But the piece they got was 3,421 carats. Now, I don't know how big that is, but I know this. When I gave Michelle a stone, either for her earrings when we lived in Pasadena, or as we began to buy the cubic zirconiums when I was buying her real rings, and salvaging these little rubies that came in the ring that we bought in the antique sale, the pawn shop. But it was, but we're salvaging little pieces of carrots and stones as our family treasure. But 3,421 carat rubies. You know, some rubies have sold for as much as $10,000 a carat, the very finest rubies that were available. There's an emerald that exists that has been found that was about 20,000 carats. This huge crystalline emerald in one piece. It is unbelievable. Richard Burton, if you grew up when I did, loved Elizabeth Taylor. And the story of my childhood was when he gave her a diamond ring as a present. It was a 69-carat diamond. At the time, back in the 60s, paid $1.2 million for the ring. Now in the 60s, if you made $1,000 a month, you could buy a home, provide for your family, and your wife didn't have to work. $1,000 a month, you could buy a home and provide for your family. I know, because that's about what my dad made at times back then. And we ate, had clothes, did okay. $1.2 million back then, 59 carat diamond. The scepter, the British royal scepter, has an egg-shaped diamond in it that was carved out of a stone. The Star of Africa, number one, is a stone. 530 carats cut from a larger stone that was 3,000 carats. Found the turn of the century. You could just go on and on. You could talk about all the resources that are out there. 71% of the Earth's surface is water. Most of this Earth has never even been walked on or treaded by man, never even been seen. Why doesn't God just say, look, I have a work to do. We need a few bucks. Things cost money. Here's the stone. Here's the nugget. Here's the piece of real estate. You can have it, and we'll be off and running. God doesn't do it. He wants us to contribute from our resource as he has blessed us and to trust him in that process. He could easily give us any one of those things and we would be set for years. He has chosen. That is not what he wants to do. He wants us to honor him. He wants us to worship him so that we will have a proper perspective and not lose faith, not lose vision, not lose an understanding of what it is that he has called us to. In the book of Proverbs 3, there's a contrast here that is made in various ways between trusting God and basically doing your own thing, but to put him first. My son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commands. For length of days and long life and peace they will add to you. There is a blessing to serve God. It is a blessing that comes from serving God. Let not mercy and truth forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. And so find favor and high esteem in the sight of God and man. It is not a burden to obey God or to serve him. Trust in the Lord with all your might and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. Again, calling us into relationship. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It will be health to your flesh and strength to your bones. Honor the Lord with your possessions. Now, this isn't just verse number 9 in the middle of material that has no context. It is talking about what a blessing it is understand what God has called us to do and to obey him and the way he works with us in a personal way. And this is in that context. Honor the Lord with your possessions, with the first fruits of all your increase, with the best, with the finest, or with the first. God comes first, commandment number 1. So your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. This is a much broader perspective than just tithes and offerings. It's talking about a way of life. It's a relationship in which we keep God first. Because, you see, God is perfect and he is right and he is just and true. And if he is first, then those are things that we're going to be emulating as well. I saw a movie once, many years back. Couldn't be too many because I'm not that old, but it seems to be many years back. But there was an individual who was a young man starting in a business, and he had very limited means, and somebody came in and gave him some cash. And this movie plays out how this young man then builds up his business and became very rich and very powerful. And he always remembered this individual who had given him some cash when he started out and he didn't have the means. And he took care of that person all through then his life. And he protected that person and made sure that that person was returned many, many times over for the investment that he had made in this other man. Think about that from time to time over the years. Think, wow, if I could have just given Bill Gates maybe $1,000 when he was starting out, and then he would have said, you know, thank you, Mark. I will always remember you. I will always keep you in mind, and hopefully I'll be prosperous someday, and I'll bring you with me. I think of that movie, and I think, you know, it's amazing. When you give to God, you're not giving to God in that same sense, hoping to get something back. But we would be absolutely foolish to not recognize that that relationship exists. Honor the Lord with your possessions, with the first fruits of all your increase, so your barns will be filled with plenty, your vats will overflow with new wine. We don't pay God as an investment to get the money back with increase. We pay God out of worship, in that sense, of our substance, which is His in the first place. He has given it to us in custody to use well, and we return it to Him in our reasonable service. Going over to Proverbs 11, just a little further over here, verse number 24. There is one who scatters, yet increases more. And there is one who withholds more than is right, but it leads to poverty. Again, the principle being addressed here, that it is important to be generous and share and to be courteous and kind, not only with each other, but obviously in respect to our relationship to God. The generous soul will be made rich, and he who waters will also be watered himself. The people will curse him who withholds grain, but blessing will be on the head of him who sells it. Now again, I understand these are proverbs, and I understand that every time you help somebody doesn't mean you're going to be increased specifically as a result. But these are principles of how God actively works in our lives, and it's important. And they are true. And there are no ways in which these laws are subverted or turned aside. They are according to God's will. God is actively involved in our lives, and He has an investment in our character, and we don't want to be outside of that process. We want to be part in relationship this way to God. God doesn't need our money, but He does want our relationship. And our service in return to Him financially is a natural response to our calling. Go to Proverbs 21. Goes a little further, and it begins to talk about our heart and how God is able to work with the heart. You know, that works two ways. He calls us to repentance, and that way we are called to serve God. But He also works with the hearts of the people around us. Have you ever needed to have the heart of your family, the heart of your employer, the heart of your friends softened on your behalf? From time to time, I counsel people to remember Proverbs 21. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. Like the rivers of water, He turns it wherever He wishes. God can soften the hearts of those around us in order to bless us as a result. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the hearts. To do righteousness and justice is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. Haughty look, a proud heart, and the plowing of the wicked are sin. The plowing of the wicked, I looked it up in a few different versions, but even the increase of the wicked and the fact that they're out there investing and producing and trying to accomplish, it doesn't come to value before God. The plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty. It does imply that we need to be wise and that we need to be careful and that God isn't necessarily going to negate that process Even if we are God's servant, and if we are careless, we will suffer pain. But those of everyone who is hasty, surely to poverty. So we have to obviously do our part. Verse 13 is what came to my mind when I was in Nigeria because of just the circumstances that were there. It says, whoever shuts his ears to the cry of the poor will also cry himself and not be heard. You know, when I saw poor people there beyond the means of which I could even consider helping them. And so I wanted to roll my window up in the back of the car so that I didn't have to risk the fact that they would come up and maybe want to reach in asking or begging for something. And yet at the same time, I thought, if I harden my heart to where I don't care, then I have not served my God in that way because of what I have become. And it was a constant emotional tug between, well, I can only help so much, and it would have been easier to not have to help at all. But what happens then to your heart? What happens then to your attitude and approach? When I went over to Nigeria, I took with me some gifts that were given to me to be given to whoever had specific need over there. It was simply a personal thing where somebody came up to me and said, I would like you to take this, this, and I would like you to give it to someone in need. And so I did that. And I went over and I passed on a sum of money to an individual who had a specific need. And the individual's need was larger by multiples than what he was given, even though what he was given was considerable because of specific circumstances. And after we got home, I got a thank you back in the email as it came back across the electronic system there, basically saying, thank you so much for these who have assisted me. It was indeed able to cover part of my need at this time. And I looked at that and I said, part. Now, I know that. But I'm being reminded that this is part of the need that existed. And so my mind begins to say, all right, I don't want to have to be responsible for the fact that there's additional need, but what if I tuned out my heart to where I don't care? So I said, well, do you try to meet the rest of that need or do you not? And you begin to wrestle with that in your mind. But what God would have us to do is to be careful never to shut our heart out and say, I am not going to participate or I will not give or I cannot share. He would rather that we were soft and tender of heart and that we were considerate in those ways. Those needs are needs that have to be weighed, even though they cannot oftentimes be fully met. God says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. God wants us to be giving and generous people, whether it is in our time or our prayers. You know, I so much appreciate the fact from time to time when someone comes up and because of a specific circumstance and someone says, I'm praying for you about that. Or I'm keeping that in my prayers, because to me that is very precious and very valuable. God knows our heart in part by our tithes and offerings, by the way that we share with others who are in need, and by the way that we are willing to sacrifice ourselves at those times. There are many needs. We'll never meet them all. But if we don't try to meet some of them, and even generously meet some of them, then I think we come up short. Mark chapter 12 is the story of the widow's mites. Verse 41. I have a mite with me. It was given to me, and I've got it in a little white plastic case. It's a little tiny copper coin, which was the smallest coin that was available in circulation at that time. And you could basically compare it to a penny today. This would be as if somebody, as this widow here, came up and in the offering plate on the holy day put in two pennies, dropped two pennies, and that was her last two pennies, and she dropped them in the plate. Now, we would say today, well, that doesn't buy anything anyway. You can find them on the street. Well, I don't think you could find these on the street in Jerusalem at that time because of the circumstances, but it's just a little tiny piece of metal. and it was brought back from Jerusalem and given to me as a present some years back. But I look at that and I just think, okay, here's the smallest amount. What somebody else would look at and say, well, that doesn't even, there's no value in that. We can't do anything with it. And yet, God shows that it was very precious because of her heart. Jesus sat, verse 41, opposite the treasury and saw people put money into the treasury. And many who were rich put in much. Then one poor widow came and threw in two mites. He said, and he called his disciples to him and said, assuredly I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who have given to the treasury. For they all put in out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty put in all that she had, her whole livelihood. I think sometimes we need to really stop and assess our heart. Now, we don't do it publicly, and I can say, and I have said before, I have never, ever seen a single offering that was turned in the church as long as I've been in the ministry, unless maybe one of the widows handed it to me personally because she wasn't able to make it to the holy day to send on in. I've seen an offering that somebody handed me into my hand. So I don't have a clue what has ever been given by anyone, and I don't want to know. But God says, when you give out of abundance, even when you give much, it's not sacrificial in the way that this widow gave out of the little that she had. Because God looks on the heart. God looks at our level of commitment and dedication, and he holds that very, very dear in our relationship. Christ died for us. And we are to live for Christ, for God the Father. And the gifts that we give are measured against what we have been given as well. 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9 are together in subject. It's Paul here is addressing the attitude of giving. Let me read you, at least in my New King James, the headings of these two chapters. Start of chapter 8, excel in giving. A little later in the chapter, Christ, our pattern, showing indeed his sacrifice and his willingness to share. Then the collection for the Judean saints. Then in chapter 9, administering the gift. And then the cheerful giver. So the whole section here is talking about taking up an offering here for the brethren in Jerusalem. I don't fully know why the brethren in Jerusalem were so destitute, but there was in this period of time, at one point, a famine. There is also the problem of the fact that they were Christians in the middle of the headquarters of the Jews. That would be like being something that was considered a cult in the middle of another religious group that all were employed by each other. And simply, it was very, very difficult in some ways to survive there in a profitable manner. So they had special problems. There also would have been probably a lot of elderly people in Jerusalem. When I went to Big Sandy for college, the families moved in, and many of the widows moved right in there because here was family. There were students. There were hundreds of students, and they didn't have necessarily family, and so the students became their family. And Friday night, I would often be in an elderly couple or a widow's home for dinner. Maybe Saturday night, I would be there for activities. We would invite them to Spokesman's Club. Thanksgiving dinner, they would join us and sit at the table. And so they moved in because there was family there. I can imagine that in Jerusalem in those early years, because again, that was a central place, that there would have been many elderly people that moved in and stayed right there because all of the activities were taking place and that became their family. Later on, when the church was driven out of Jerusalem, many of the elderly people simply would not have been in a position to leave. And so their conditions, because they didn't have Social Security and Medicare and all the other facilities we have today, their conditions could have been much more desperate very quickly because they were Christians. And so Jerusalem was in a very difficult spot. Paul here is talking about taking up the offering to help them and to assist them in this way. Chapter 8, verse 1. Brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. He's not talking to the churches of Macedonia. The churches of Macedonia are basically to the north of Corinth. Probably Philippi, maybe Berea. Remember, the Bereans were so diligent in studying the scriptures. But some of the churches to the north, and he's telling the Corinthians how even in their deep poverty, they abounded in the riches of their being very generous and willing to share. For I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. He said they had so little and they implored, they begged Paul to be able to give and to contribute to those who were in need in Jerusalem. And this they did, not as we had hoped, he's saying even more than what we had expected, but first gave themselves to the Lord, and then to us by the will of God. They not only gave an offering, but then they offered to help in any way they possibly could to assist us, to see that this would be distributed accordingly. So we urged Titus that as he had begun, so he would also complete this grace in you as well. He's now saying to the Corinthians, would you consider their great need and yet their willingness to share? And look at yourselves. He says, but as you abound in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, and in all diligence, and in your love for us, see that you abound in this grace also. And so he's basically telling the Corinthian church, many who have gone without in order to serve those in Jerusalem who are destitute at this time. He goes on in chapter 9 and in verse number 6. He said, this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that you always having all sufficiency in all things, have an abundance of every good work. As it is written, he has dispersed abroad, he has given to the poor, his righteousness remains forever. Now may he who supplies seed to the sower, bread for food, supply and multiply the seed you have sown, and increase the fruit of your righteousness, while you are enriched in everything for all liberality, which causes thanksgiving through us to God. For the administration of this service not only supplies the needs of the saints, but also is abounding through many thanksgivings to God. It says, it doesn't just take care of the people in Jerusalem, but your own personal relationship to God has been increased. While through the proof of this ministry, they glorify God for the obedience of your confession of the gospel of Christ, and for your liberal sharing with them and all men, by their prayer for you, who long for you because of the exceeding grace of God in you. Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. You know, I take some gift over to Nigeria on behalf of someone who said, please take this and give it to someone. And I come back with a card basically saying, you know, praise be to God for your kindness. Thank you. I will pray for you and keep you in my prayers for your courtesy and my need. It's a remarkable thing to see. And a couple of those cards, again, I did bring back and passed on to people that had been generous in that way. There's a lot of things covered here. I read very small elements of chapters 8 and 9. But it says that we should give God our offerings willingly, without hesitation. It also shows that an offering should be sacrificial, and that the zeal of others around us should indeed encourage us and strengthen us in those ways. It talks about the encourage of the Corinthians to plan ahead, to prepare their offering, to set it aside so that it would be ready when the time comes. When you have an offering that you prepare for the feast, I remember the time in my life when I would come to the Holy Day and I would say, okay, I would get my envelope and I would take out my wallet and I would look at the checkbook and I would say, what have I got? And when I did that, there was always something, and I would put it together and put it in the offering and went my way. The time came when I was enjoined to look ahead and say, now hold it. I don't want to give God just whatever's left after my choices have all been exercised. I want to put God first. And at that point in time, I began to then set aside in preparation, as Paul encouraged the Corinthians. I would set aside the preparation for those offerings so that when the time came, I was able to give basically to God my first, that which I had prepared along the way. And I found that it was very, very much more rewarding and satisfying and responsive to God to be able to serve Him in that way. We are not trying to impoverish ourselves to serve God. But God does indeed require of us, at the very least, that we put Him first in this way. We are offering our worship to God, and He is able to, obviously, more than bless us. I may have used the example one time, but it was so dramatic to Michelle and I. Michelle and I waited 7 years in order to have Megan. We didn't wait. We weren't waiting, but we didn't have a baby. And so it took 7 years before she was pregnant with Megan as our first child. Megan then born, obviously, about a year later, 9 months. But in the course of that, when she was pregnant, we sat down and we said, okay, this is our first child. It is our first fruit, and we do want to dedicate her to God. And we began to then set aside an offering of thanks for our child, our first child. And we would give that offering when Megan was born. And so we began to prepare that, and it was to us a first fruit offering. Whether we understood first fruits or not wasn't even our concern so much as we wanted to give God thanks in a specific way. When Megan was born, she had a cesarean birth, and that meant the price of the birth we had negotiated with the hospital back then, I don't know, a couple of $1,000s back then for a birth through the hospital and this particular program. And the cost of the birth went up to about $12,000, like, instantly because of cesarean, back then. And so here we are going, well, you know, isn't that amazing? You know, we're set aside this money, and we're thanking God for all His blessings, and we just went completely upside down in the hole and backwards. Well, anyway, we gave our offering very gladly. And after the course of the birth and the circumstance, as we're out of the hospital and we begin to talk to the doctors and stuff, see, I'm a minister, and sometimes the hospitals like to do ministers favor because they consider us associates in some ways because we do work together, we're in the hospitals, we're helping the patients. And in the course of that, Michelle said, well, you know, this is a lot of money, and my husband's a minister, and we make, 20 cents an hour, more than that, we're comfortable, okay, quite comfortable. But she just says, we have limited means. And so one of the doctors, she talked to, says, okay, I will drop anything that is not covered directly by the insurance. Okay. And so they did, and then she talked to someone else, she went to the anesthesiologist, and said, well, you know, Dr. So-and-so said he would do this to help out under these circumstances. The anesthesiologist said, okay, we'll do that to it. Well, she went through the whole system, and everybody said, okay, bang, 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 went all the way through. When it was all said and done, and all the charges were dropped and something, there was something like $7,500 in medical expenses that were just set aside. Just, oh, I'm here. We'll do you a favor. Now, in that sense, she asked. And maybe I don't remember the story right, but I had the $7,500 in my notes from that time. So that was the amount that I calculated back then. It seemed to be about what the gift was. Do you think we gave God $7,500? I don't think so. I don't remember what we gave God. But we put that offering together over a period of 9 months while Megan was in Michelle's womb. And the offering we gave would have been, I'm sure, a few hundred dollars at the most that we, in addition to anything else, set aside and gave to God. And He turned around, and at least even in that specific way, it was multiplied beyond belief. I'm just saying, God says, obey me, serve me, put me first, trust me, don't be tight, and don't be cheap, and trust me to bless you and see if I don't pour out, you know, the open the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing for you. It happened. We were astounded. We did not expect that to take place. But God blessed us in a remarkable way. We could not believe with Megan the clothes that came pouring in, because again, people knew that we had not had a child, friends in the church, friends and neighbors out of the church, and there were clothing and gifts came pouring in to where it was just beyond belief. Hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of gifts and items came pouring in recognition of the fact that we now have this child of our own. Now, when Derek came along, we got a couple of boxes of Triscuits and a pair of sandals. And so he didn't quite have the same program, but, you know, he didn't want to wear all those fancy dresses anyway. You couldn't pass them on down. But it was unbelievable. We sat there and we just watched this wall of gifts and blessings and financial opportunities and, in that sense, reduction of our expenses come pouring in. I believe personally that God blessed us more so as a result of our desire to give Him thanks for granting us our child. I believe that He blessed us above and beyond what He would have blessed us in other means. Now that's just my personal belief, but that's the way I saw it play out. Go to the book of Philippians. It's just not a burden to obey God. It's not a burden to trust God if you're sick. It's not a burden to not work on the Sabbath if indeed the employer would require us to do so. You know, there were so many, I heard time and time again, you know, well, you know, you ministers, you don't have to put your jobs on the line. I am so glad that ministry got fired back in 1995. Okay, I'm so glad the ministry got fired back in 1995, because the ministry could finally say, well, yeah, okay, I got fired because I keep the Sabbath. You know, up to that point, well, you guys don't even know what it's all about yet. Well, it's kind of nice. It's kind of nice to say, well, okay, that happened to me too. Philippians 4, verse number 10. I realize fired can be a technicality because, in my case, I resigned. But, you know, I had to resign. So, I mean, it wasn't like I resigned because I was tired of serving. The circumstances were such that forced us to do so. But Philippians 4, verse number 10. I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now, at last, your care for me has flourished again. Though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. The Philippians here are mentioned in terms of giving to Paul in a way that was special, more than what anybody would have expected, and yet very, very treasured by God. Though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in regard of need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. He was okay with the Triscuits and the sandals. That's what he had. I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I've learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Nevertheless, you have done well that you shared in my distress. Now you Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church shared with me concerning giving and receiving, but you only. Paul went places where he wasn't yet accepted or trusted or yet responded to. He did not want to say, well, I came here for your money, therefore give me an offering to pay my expenses. So he worked with his hands, which handicapped his ability to serve in various ways. But here is a church that sent money along behind him and supported him, even though they themselves were in need. For even in Thessalonica, you sent aid once and again for my necessities. And he lived very frugally as a result. Not that I seek the gift, but I seek the fruit that abounds to your account. He's saying, I seek your blessing. And your giving and sharing in God's work in this way brings that into your own account. Indeed, I have all and abound. I am full, having received from Epaphroditus the things which were sent from you, a sweet-smelling aroma, an acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God. So it portrays the offering as a sacrifice on the altar with sweet-smelling incense going up to God. It says, a sweet-smelling aroma, an acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God. And my God shall supply all your need according to his riches in glory by Christ Jesus. I can say, and there's one thing that I've always appreciated about my wife, Michelle, in the entire marriage, if I had ever one time said, and I've said on different times, but I said, whenever I have said, I'll say it that way, so-and-so has need, I would like to help them. And she has a standard answer. She says, you'll never have to worry about me questioning that in you. You don't have to ask me, you need something. She has never said, do you think we can do it? Is this a good time? Well, we do have some bills that we're not caught up on, or we're trying to do this, or I'd like to take a trip. She has never once said anything but, well, you know, that's fine with me. I appreciate that I have had that kind of a companion and that kind of unity in God's service. It's a great blessing. Today is our anniversary as well. As I left the house, I yelled back, happy anniversary, honey, and walked out the door. She gave me an anniversary present last night. It was you have to be married a while to get to this point, you know. You don't start out here. This is what you build towards. But it was a can of anchovies, a can of kippered herring, and a can of sardines. That was my anniversary present. And hopefully, you know, all things being equal, we tend to move our anniversary around. We have to kind of wait till a good day when everything's not busy, and then we go to dinner or do something. Sometimes it's a week before or after. One time on our anniversary, we were on the way to dinner, I think it was, and the car in front of us got in a wreck, and it was a church member, and we ended up spending that night in the hospital with the church members. They were taken into the hospital. I remember the first time we went to a cafeteria for our dinner on our anniversary. And we figured, yeah, we're getting older. We're sitting at movies or something at our anniversary dinner as compared to, you know, some nice big steakhouse. And so we figured that we were maturing, you know, because we were into the cafeteria mode at that point. But it's nice to work together even in tough times. Easy times and tough times both, but it's nice to work together. God says that we should offer to him in a sacrificial manner, and it becomes a sweet-smelling savor. I went one time to eat dinner with a family at Thanksgiving before I was married, and I was there, and the family was very, very poor. And I was a student, so, I mean, I didn't exactly have a kitchen, but you could bring something, and we brought something to contribute. I think I had one of the other students with me at the time. But the family was very poor, but they wanted to share what they had, so everything was stretched. I don't know if you know what that means. Everything was made in such a way that you could take the food, the meat, and everything, and expand it with something to make it go around the table further. And I remember sitting there looking at that and saying, well, you know, I could have had pretty much anything I wanted today if I chose. But you're here with people that are rejoicing together, they're serving God together, and worshiping before God in that way together. And it is. I remember that meal more so than some of the very fine, spectacular, and wonderful meals I've had over and over again. Say at the feast, when I'm able to eat so well, or choose wherever I would like to be, and the whole family can go there at the same time. But still, I remember sitting at that table with that family, and eating food that was, frankly, of a very poor quality and thin. The soup was very thin. But to be there, and I was grateful and happy to have opportunity to share in that way. They wanted to share what they had. They simply had very, very little. Malachi 3 is a passage that I almost wasn't even going to use. used it so many times over the past, and it is so strongly written, but I thought, God wrote this, I didn't write this. And I will at least mention it. God says, will a man rob God? Malachi 3, verse 8. Yet you have robbed me. But you say, in what way have we robbed you? In tithes and in offerings. You're cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house, and prove me now in this, says the Lord of hosts, if I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you such blessing that there will not be room enough to receive it. Now that's what God says. And the purpose is this. He wants us to make sacrifice because that is pleasing to him, because it's a measure of our heart and our character, and he wants us to have the power of the universe one day, and he doesn't want to give it to us if we're chintzy, or if we're stingy, or if we're selfish, or if we're not willing to share. I'll bet I think, in my mind, at the feast film this year, there was the camp film, and there was a girl in the camp film that they were interviewing, and she was kind of giggling and laughing and excited, and then she says, well, can I say it? Can I say, I'd like to be a minister's wife. And I wanted to stand up and shout and go, hooray for that girl. Give that girl a medal. She said, you know, she wanted to entertain people and have people stay in her house, and she had a positive attitude assessment of service and helping and caring people. I wish I could have got up and shook her hand. It was a movie, all right? I couldn't do so, but I just thought, what a wonderful example. What an incredible statement. And I think about that from time to time. And I just think of the example she set, and it encourages me. Harold Jackson, when I lived in Pasadena, had a chance to visit with him from time to time. And I remember, I always enjoyed him because he had been in some very difficult places. He'd been in Africa. When I was in Nigeria, one of the members came up and showed me an old Good News magazine from like early 1960, I think it would have been. And it showed Harold Jackson on the cover starting a tour, a baptizing tour in Africa. And one of the members there in Nigeria, right here, is a young man on the front of the picture, on the front of the cover. And he's showing me this is the tour. He'd met Harold Jackson back then. So I've heard so many of Mr. Jackson's stories in years past of some of the things they faced. But he told me a story of when he came into the church. The church he was in was a Sabbath-keeping church, but he recognized in his mind that this is not where God was working. He no longer believed that God was actively working in that group. And yet he didn't know where God was working, but he knew he was working somewhere. And so he had a business, and he made money, and so for a number of years, he just took his tithes and his offerings, and he prepared them all through the year, and whenever he had increase, and he put them in the bank and account, and they just sat there, and over years, there were thousands of dollars building up in this account, because he had a business, and he was making money and contributing toward that account, but he wasn't going to touch it until he figured out, or at least God showed him where he was working. And then when he found out then about the Worldwide Church of God, and he went and I think he met Mr. Armstrong at that time, and he said, okay, this is it. And he just cleared the account because it never was his. And like I said, I forget, we discussed it at the time, but it was multiple thousands of dollars back then that had built up over this period of time. And he just said, all right, there it is. It's yours. And I always thought, what a great attitude and approach. It wasn't his. It was God's. He wasn't sure where God was working, but he figured God was working somewhere. And when he figured that out, and God showed him, that he would go ahead and put it back into someone's custody in that way. And what we give to God is nothing compared to what he gives to us. John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. God the Father gave his Son so that we might be saved. Jesus Christ gave his life as a sacrifice so that we might be saved. And we as Christians take on our elder brother, Jesus Christ, and our Father's mind and nature as they live in us. God the Father and Jesus Christ are the greatest givers that there are. They are the greatest givers that we could ever even consider, and we are to be like them.